Coming to you by way of the not-for-profit Mainframe Studios at 900 KOA in downtown Des Moines, this is 900 Views, a podcast about building community through the arts as we build an arts community. I'm your host, Pat Bodie, and today I'm in the office of Toby Parks, co-founder of a brand new music venue that's next door, XBK, at 1159 24th in the Drake neighborhood. Now, XBK stands for X, or former Brooklyn, since Toby spent a decade plus in that borough at Sony Records. XBK is just the latest in a list of Toby's music and community-supporting ventures. Toby founded Station One Records in 2015. Business partner Thomas Kutz joined shortly after. Station One is a nonprofit Des Moines-based recording label intent on elevating our musicians here to the national stage. Toby presented music acts in parks around the city to build up the neighborhoods beyond downtown, and Toby teaches at Drake while securing a law degree and raising two children with wife Janae Harvey. I can't believe you've done all you've done. It's just absolutely insane. So tell me a little bit about what happens after the first of the year when we have a more grand opening. We've had a soft opening for XBK.
Right. So far, since we opened in September, a lot of what we've been trying to do is just sort of figure out how the building runs. You know, like Tom and I have put on a number of different shows, and we've both been in bands and have done this kind of work before, but we've never actually run a facility. We're continually, and I think that this will be something that we work on over time, but we're continually sort of fine-tuning the space, you know, from the aesthetic of the space to the sound and all of those things. So we opened, say, you know, for instance, without a stage curtain. At the top of the year, we'll have a stage curtain. We intentionally, in terms of our beverage service, we had intentionally wanted to keep our beverage service very minimal. So generally, when you come into XBK, we have six beers on tap, we have three wines on tap, and then a small assortment of domestics, and then a few different mixed drinks, your standard mixed drinks. We brought in an amazing bar manager who has convinced us that we really need to expand our drink menu, and he's a top-rate mixologist here in Des Moines. And so at the top of the year,
it's an art form as well.
It is. It really is. And, you know, I'm a bit of a wine drinker. I don't really do the mixed drinks. And then he was like, well, you can do all these special things. And he's proven it too. So, you know, he's done a few different events that we've had at XBK, and he's created some of his own cocktails, and they tend to be the top selling cocktails that we have for the night. And so we're going to unveil this new beverage menu that we have at the top of the year as well, which will change seasonally. But we're really excited about that and really just trying to create a different live music experience here in Des Moines.
Well, I read somewhere an interesting phrase, and I don't know whether it was a typo or the actual concept, which was to kind of create communities for the arts versus community by the arts.
Right. So, and I think what we're trying to get to is, you know, Tom and I are both musicians, and we've toured all around the country and played at a number of different venues, and many of them are amazing and wonderful, and so much of what we have here in Des Moines as well is amazing and wonderful. But those venues tend to be ran by people who are not musicians, and so they don't really, I don't want to say that they don't really understand the ins and outs of what it's like to be on the road. And but what we wanted to do is create a place of starting from, we want to make our artists happy, you know, and if
Sweet.
You do that, yeah. And if you make the artists happy and they're having a great time and they feel welcome in the space, they're going to put on a better show, which is going to create a much better experience for the patrons that are there. So our whole goal is to really create, you know, we call it an almost like an arts laboratory. You know, we want to create a space where artists can come in and really, from the moment that you walk in the door, create an experience. You know, that experience happens from, you know, again, the beverage service. We've had artists that come in that we have our bartender work with them closely about, you know, what sort of vibe is your music, and can we do the beverage service around making, you know, matching that. You know, so if we have,
that's interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, if we have like a you know, using, this is just a very simple example, like a roots rock band, then maybe we do more whiskey drinks or something like that that kind of really matches the vibe of what the music is. So we're going to be doing a lot more of that at the top of the year. Our sound person, after he gets everybody set up and gets the sound set up, he always talks with the bands about what kind of pre-show music would you like. So it's not something that's driven by us. It's what's driven by the artist. So when they come in, they feel at home. The other part is also thinking about the patron when they come in. So our goal is the moment that somebody walks in the door that we want them to feel sort of transformed into a different place. You know, we're not, I guess so many music venues too, and I won't say all of them, but there are a lot of venues that are our size that tend to be volume based, right? So their goal is that a lot of ways the music becomes secondary. So they have a band that's playing up on stage, but their primary goal is selling booze.
Yeah, I kind of read where you're even avoiding the bar stools.
Yeah,
perhaps?
We have no bar stools around our bar. You know, we want to think of ourselves akin to something that's a sort of less highbrow version of, say, the Civic Center, where, you know, you go to the Civic Center and you see a play or you'll see a musician, and you're there to focus on what's on the stage. You're not there to, you know, pardon the parlance, get hammered on $4 PBRs, you know? Yeah. And that's what we want to create at XBK, someplace where, you know, you walk in the door, you're there to see the arts that are on the stage, and then our beverage service is really just a compliment to your evening. It's not, that's not what you're there for. You're there to see what's going to be on the stage. And, you know, I don't know if there are many venues of our size that really do that or look at it that way. And so that's really what we're going for, is just to create, you know, create experiences.
Well, between the recording studio and the venue and the things you've done out and about in the parks, I'm hoping you can make me feel a little better about something. When I embarked upon this podcast almost a year ago now, it was with the concept that I thought in my heart that Des Moines was really at a cusp of maybe a renaissance in the arts. Something really meaningful was going to happen here, and then the social club closed. And it just broke my heart and made me start to rethink that whole concept. You were incubated in part by the social club. What can you tell me about the impact you see of that closing, but at the same time, your place that was so nurtured mm-hmm. opening?
You know, it is really sad to see the social club close because I know that, you know, with Zach Manheimer and Mickey Davis and a number of the people who were involved in that and the heart and passion that they put in bringing that to fruition. You know, I think personally, I think one of the problems, I don't want to get into the problems, what I think of what, you know, happened there, but I think it was just such a huge facility. And I think that, you know, when you have people that dream big, and Zach definitely dreamed very big, and I think the concept was there. I just don't know if, you know, Des Moines is still growing. It's still, we're still really cultivating an arts community, you know, and mm-hmm. I think it was incredibly ambitious. I think to have a complex that's that huge. And I think that the community will come along, you know, and I think it was just a little bit ahead of its time, you know. But to that same extent, I feel incredibly hopeful. I think that, you know, at XBK, we've been able to absorb some of those things. Like mm-hmm. we have, you know, they had the NOLA jazz band there once a month. We've taken that in. We're working a lot with Iowa Public Radio as well. So we've been able to take some of the programming that was existing there and put it into our space, where our overhead is much less than what the social club was, you know.
Yes.
And I think that something like that, I think it can happen. I think that Des Moines is, you know, it's really just starting to learn more of what the sort of arts culture is, you know. If that, does that make any sense?
Yeah, that makes a little sense. And so tell me a little bit about what you see as the arts culture. What is it?
I think that it's hard to explain, and it's something that we're trying to figure out as well. You know, I think that because Des Moines, and I don't want this to sound condescending by any means.
Yeah,
you know, I don't want to be the New Yorker who's coming and being like, well, Des Moines was.
Well, I was going to ask you to compare us to Brooklyn, so go ahead.
Yeah. But I think that, you know, the city, from my understanding, over the course of the past 10 to 15 years, has really done a 180.
Yes, this, you know, is a fact.
And I think that there's been so much that's been done, particularly, I'll just speak specifically around live music and the music scene in Des Moines, with people starting something from very little, you know. Like, you have, you know, guys like Sam Summers or Amadeo Rossi and, you know, the folks over at Lefties, those people who have built these venues in the hopes that maybe there was a live music culture and people were going to come out and see live music in Des Moines. And they started building that, and they built something, and people are doing it. And I think that that's what gave folks like Zach, like, the hope that, you know, well, if we build something bigger and more expansive, that there's going to be more people that are going to come in and do that. And I think what we want to do with XBK, which is really build upon the platform that has already been built here, but doing it more incrementally, right?
Yes.
So People are now used to going out to Vaudeville Muse, or they'll go to Woolies, or they'll go to Lefties, and, you know, they'll go to Noche to see live music. And what we want to do is just up the ante of that experience, you know? And I think that with what we're doing and a lot of the things that are happening, even here in the Drake neighborhood, which is something that I'm incredibly excited to see what happens in the next 3 to 5 years in this area, because we have, you know, we've opened it, you know, we're really, the Drake neighborhood is the only place in Des Moines that I'm aware of where you can literally walk across the street to two different music venues, you know, like creating a little music corridor. And there's been a lot of discussion about making this area really kind of a sort of pulsing music community. There's, you know, where Crazy Horse Guitars is, there's going to be a restaurant that's going to be music themed. You know, we have Lefties that's there. We're here, you know, talking with the folks at Papa Kino's. They want to start doing some live music. And so there's a lot of that that's kind of sort of culminating. And I think it's going to be really, really exciting here.
So be a prognosticator for a moment. Say that stuff happens. Mm-hmm. What happens with the community as a result? And there's two communities there.
Yeah.
The music scene community, the music, the artists themselves, right, and those of us who live here.
Yeah. And I think that it's going to get even bigger and better. I mean, even, you know, things that, you know, we're just kind of a small part of that. But, you know, even things like Waterworks Park, too, that, you know, they're doing those transformations and all the stuff. Some of the things that are happening downtown, like the skate park and all of those things that are happening. I think what it does is really makes folks who are, and I don't want to sound, you know, ageist by any means, but I think the biggest problems with communities like Des Moines, and I'm originally, you know, I claim Brooklyn, but I'm originally from St. Louis, you know, and it's the same.
Me too.
Oh, yeah. So it's the same kind of thing that happens in cities like Des Moines and St. Louis and Kansas City, that people feel that to get this sort of, you know, great arts and culture experience, they have to leave. And I think that what's important is trying to create space to keep those young people here, whether those be young artists like the artists that we work with on Station One, or whether that those are people that want to work in the arts, like the students that we work with at Drake, you know, and trying to get them to understand that there is an arts culture that's here, and trying to build things to keep them here. Because if we keep them here, they're the ones that are going out to the live music shows. They're the ones that are going to continue to invest in the community. And the more that we can keep them here, the more robust it's going to be. And it's going to draw out those that, you know, may not have went to other shows. And I have to say that it's been, you know, with XBK, we've only been open, you know, 2.5 months at this point. But we've seen such a diverse array of people come through our doors, you know, and I think that, you know, some of them, we can look at a show, you know, certain shows that we have, you can tell that it's folks that maybe they go out, you know, maybe they'll go to the 8035 Music Festival and, you know, maybe one or two other shows, and maybe they're coming in from, you know, Waukee or something,
right,
and don't get to Des Moines that often to see live music. And then we have other shows that are the people that come out every time, you know. And I think that it's just really about, if people can go out and they have a great experience, they're going to continue to go out and want that great experience, you know, and that's what we're trying to do.
Is there an experience here, mm-hmm, that's beyond the relation to just directly the music, that's more kind of the audience based, or the, or getting into the Drake neighborhood based, mm-hmm, or something? You know what I'm trying to ask? Is, mm-hmm, there connections? Are you seeing connections happen that would not happen but for having this kind of engagement?
I think particularly in this community, specifically the Drake neighborhood, yes. So, you know, we work a lot with Alec at Papa Kino's, you, mm-hmm, know, so we, and I think that there are a lot of people in this particular neighborhood that want to work together to build the community. And it's not so much, you know, like even, you know, there's a lot of things when we were about to open XBK, a lot of people are asking, well, you know, have you talked with Eric and Ann at Lefties? What do they think about you opening up? And, you know, trying to build sort of this sense of competition. And I, you know, and they came over to XBK, and I, you know, we do stuff over there all the time. And, you know, our goal is the more the merrier, like the more
the collaborative.
Yeah. The more things that we can do. We've talked about doing collaborative programming. So, you know, we talk back and forth about things that we think that, you know, as an example, for instance, they sometimes do like a Broadway show films, you know, so they'll do shows that have show tunes, and they'll play the movies, and then people sing along. And somebody approached us about wanting to do a cabaret, like a show tune cabaret here.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, we don't want to encroach on what they're doing, but maybe we can plan our nights the same, because we, you know, for XBK, we only stay open. We only serve alcohol until 11 and we close at midnight.
Yeah.
Lefties is a standard bar hour. So we can actually build on that. So people can come to the Drake neighborhood and actually make an evening of it in a way that maybe they think about that in the East Village or other places. So
it's the music bar crawl.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, and we've talked with, you know, even the restaurateurs here, like, you know, like I said, the folks at Papakino's or MJ over at Gazzali's or the folks at Fernando's, about what we can do of people saying, you know what, I want to go, I'm just going to go to the Drake neighborhood. There's enough restaurants here that we can, you know, we can go to the Drake Diner and have dinner, and then we can go see a show at XBK. And if we don't like what's going on at XBK, we'll go over and see what's happening at Lefty's, and because it's literally across the street, you know. And I think that we're really starting to build that here. So I think that, yeah, those, I think the community connections, the other thing that's been very helpful and also inspiring to both Tom and I is the work that we've been doing with Drake students, because those are that's the audience in a lot of ways, you know? And working,
and can we keep them here then?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, giving them, you know, we teach like music business courses, and a lot of the courses have a practicum component to where they actually have to do the work. So, you know, and with opening XBK, it's been a next step. Like, we've, for this semester, as the first semester, we've taught a live event production course. So the students, they have all the book work and all these things about learning how to promote concerts, but then they actually get the opportunity to do it, and they've been doing them at XBK. Tonight actually is the culmination of the semester. They're doing their final show after our NOLA Jazz Band happy hour this evening. But
featuring Abby Sawyer, may I mention.
Yes. Oh, she's so good.
Great guest on this show.
But, you know, they're promoting shows, and my hope is that they take the experience that they've learned here and can go and put together a show, not just at XBK, but at Vaudeville Muse or at Lefty's or at Woolies, or, you know, and the more you build that culture, the more that students want to be involved in it.
Yeah, and you're building the professionalism at the same time.
Exactly.
So you've probably pre-answered this question, but I just want to double check. So in your Station One label statements online, you have this quote: building a solid arts infrastructure that is recognized on a national level that attracts and retains talent is vital to making Des Moines the destination ahead and never the city left behind. Mm-hmm. I love that quote. What's missing from our infrastructure?
I think that a lot of it is the business, the music business knowledge, and that's what we really bring to the table. And I say this not because I'm, you know, I know all music industry things, but
well,
I
you think, spent a long time in I copyright have. At Sony.
Yeah,
and you've got a law degree now, and
and you know, Tom is a lawyer as well.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the part of it, is that there are so many music programs that focus primarily on, you know, teaching kids to play music, or about, you know, it's about the performance component, or it's about the promotion component. But in today's music industry, it's really about, we need to get artists to think about the arts as a small business and not necessarily about just the performance component. And so what we do at Station One is really work with our artists to, you know, we set them down and go through business plans, and we make them think about it. And just the same way that, you know, we went through the paces to open XBK or to start Station One, we're making these artists go through the paces around their art and to look at it as a business. And a lot of that comes from, in terms of the music industry today, unfortunately, the music itself has almost become a loss leader, because we've went from, you know, the days, well, and it is actually shifting a little bit in with the sort of resurgence of vinyl, but, you know, we went from the day where people would buy a $20 vinyl record, or, you know, a $15 CD or something, where the artist is making a substantial take from, versus making 0.008 cents on a stream of their album, you know?
Yes.
And so the revenue from the actual music that they create has gone down, but the expense of creating it still exists, you know? And so what we have to do is help them come up with creative ways to be able to be sustainable, because what they're creating is not really generating anything, but what ways can we generate money? And then, to the extent that we're helping them generate revenue, how can they, where are the channels that they can collect revenue from the music that they do have? So that's where a lot of the education piece comes in for independent artists, because, you know, there's a quagmire of, and my zone of interest really is music publishing, and music publishing in the United States is just a crazy quagmire of laws and rules that, you know, 90% of the population don't really understand, or they kind of have a little bit of an understanding mm-hmm. of it, but don't fully recognize it. And so, but that's where a lot of the money is made, you know, from, you know, if you can own a copyright, you can make a living off of that for the rest of your life. I mean, I am the sort of a little factoid about me. My father was a songwriter.
Yes.
And he wrote the song Just One Look. I don't know if you are familiar with that song.
I read that and I meant to look that up. Darn it, I forgot to do that. I apologize for not knowing that.
No. Well, if you hear it, you'll be like, oh my gosh, it's that song. It's the song that you hear, you'll be walking through the grocery store and it's on, or it's on every oldie station. But the song was written in 1963. And to this day, my father has passed, but it's still generating a reasonable amount of revenue.
Oh, geez.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's because he was, you know, one of those artists that he initially had lost his rights when he'd first written the song. And then it's a whole other story, but he worked with an attorney who helped him regain his rights. The attorney was a little bit shady, so he took a lot of money from my dad, but that's another story for another day.
Yeah.
But the point being is that, you know, he owned his copyright, and he's been able to, you know, my dad throughout his entire life lived off the royalties of that one song.
Wow.
You know, and if we can get artists to understand that their art has value and that they understand what that value is and they can find ways to both leverage it and then also collect from it, they can actually make a living from it, you know, and that's the part. So going through the copyright components and the publishing stuff, like that's where a lot of the revenues are made from the music itself. And so getting them to understand all of the loopholes that are out there,
yeah.
getting them to understand all of the legal components, then they can actually leverage that and make money.
Are there many other nonprofit recording labels?
You know, there are. Most of them tend to be focused on sort of not, I don't want to say like not non-traditional music, but non-popular music.
Mm-hmm.
So we're one of the few, maybe the only, I don't want to say the only, because I'm sure that there are tons of them that are out there somewhere. But I know when I was doing the research about starting Station One, there were none at the time that were focused primarily, that were actually, let me set that aside, that were not university based.
Yeah.
That were not, that focused on music, popular music.
Yeah.
Most of them are, you know, classical, jazz, that kind of thing. And they're primarily based on just the music distribution. So they would, you know, help artists, like they would do traditional label services. So they would help the artists supplement the payments for recording. They would help them do the distribution, the artwork, all that kind of stuff. And then that's kind of the end of it. There's very few that had this educational component. Some of them, like, you know, NYU has a in-house record label that the students run that, you know, if, as far as I know, it's like NYU artists that are signed to this label, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's very sort of insular to the university. But there aren't many that are otherwise. I've had, since starting Station One, ironically, I've had several people from the coasts actually call me to be like, how did you do this? And and what are you doing? So like somebody
that's
from
sweet.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love hearing those stories.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is like thinking about Des Moines as being something that is like, I think that's the cool thing about smaller cities like Des Moines in particular, that you can actually do this kind of thing. I was talking to a woman that's based in San Francisco that found out about Station One and was kind of picking my brain about, you know, what we did and how we did this, because she wants to do something similar there. And I said, well, I think that part of why we've been successful is because where we're located. You know, if we were in San Francisco or New York trying to do this, we're one of a gajillion people trying to do, I'll just put something in the arts, you know,
yeah.
And it's, you know, everybody's trying to do something. Whereas in Des Moines, I think that there's a dedicated group of people who really want to see the arts, really want to see arts and culture be a foundation for our community and for even the economic stability of our community in a lot of ways, you know. And I think that folks at the partnership and other places actually see arts and culture as being a foundation to continue to attract new people to the community, to keep people in the community, you know. And there's, and I know that other cities look at it that way, but I think Des Moines really kind of puts its money where its mouth is in that regard. And I think I've been a beneficiary of that, you know. And I think that we're very fortunate that we can come into a community that's supportive, that is small enough that we can, you know, really make a difference, and that, you know, we're not in the, you know, and it's cheap enough to do, you know. I mean, one of the things that I always talk to musicians about, of why Des Moines is so great, because I get a lot of, you know, particularly a lot of my Brooklyn friends, which is why, you know, I jokingly say, like, we named XBK. XBK is sort of a snub to all of my friends in Brooklyn who are like, why are you moving to Idaho? You know,
like, ouch.
Yeah. But it's, you know, part of it is that, you know, you can live in a city where you have a high quality of life and a low cost of living. All of those people who are giving me so much trouble about living in Des Moines, Iowa, none of them own a music venue. You know, none of them would even be able to have the ability to do that because it's just not feasible there. To be able to spend time to not only do my own art and do my own work, but also to be able to help other people, you know, and you just don't have the time to be able to do it there, because either you're working, you know, 80 hours a week to try and, you know, maintain the closet that you live in, you know, and there are so many other people that are doing it that you're in constant competition to try and, you know, bubble up above something. And you can come here, you're centrally located. So for a musician, where in today's day and age that, you know, because the music itself is not making them money, they're making money from live performance. So you're centrally located. You can go, you know, within 5 or 6 hours and be in a number of major cities, and you can make a living from that. Whereas, I mean, there is some of that on the East Coast where, you know, you can do the trip from Boston down to DC and back up, and, you know, many artists make a lot of money doing that, and that's kind of what their gig is. But I think that there's a lot more potential in the Midwest than I think what the coasts give us credit for.
Well, before we have to wrap this up, could you introduce an artist that you're working with, and so that we can hear a little bit about what's happening on the music scene in Des Moines.
Right. I'm going to make a reference, actually, and I know we talked about only naming one, but I'm actually going to name two.
Okay, that's all right. Okay. Yeah.
So one of the artists that we've been working with nearly from the beginning of Station One, it's the Tom actually discovered her and brought her to the Station One family, is Lily Dete. She's probably the most active artist that's on the roster. She's been touring a lot. The first couple of years we worked with her, she was going to college, actually, at the University of Iowa. So she accelerated her college career, graduated early, and now just recently put out a new record back in November, and has just been touring like crazy. And that's how she's been able to really make her living, as being a musician. She also part-time bartends at XBK, so she helps supplement a little bit there. But I mean, most of her time is spent on the road, and that's exactly what we wanted to do to help her. Like, she's one of, you know, we call those kinds of artists like the road dogs, you know, and that's what she wants. Contrary to that, we have, or not contrary, but we also are working with a 16-year-old artist named Eleanor Grace. She just turned 16, so I'm trying to learn to say 16 and not 15 so she doesn't eye roll me.
Okay.
but she is a pop artist that is based here in Des Moines, but suddenly has taken off in Germany, strangely enough.
Wow.
Which is...
I was wondering how we get to the national stage, and here we are jumping to the international stage.
Yeah, and that's the it's just such a crazy thing that one of her songs got picked up on a playlist on Spotify that was a German playlist. And it's spreading like wildfire there. So we have sort of these two different dichotomies of somebody who's, you know, grinding it out in the clubs and doing all of those things and you know, making a career as a live musician. And then we have Eleanor Grace, who will eventually get to that point. You know, right now, she's, like I said, she's 16, so she's kind of homebound a little bit and really building her live music repertoire. But in terms of the reach and scope, you know, she's played maybe two shows outside of Des Moines, and like, she's got, you know, 30,000 streams in Berlin, you know, so it's pretty crazy.
Which one will we be hearing from here?
I think that we will be hearing from...
She's meditating on this.
I am. I think we'll do... Lily Dete, since her record was the most recent that was out, and so we have a more recent music video, so we'll do that.
Let's listen to Lily Dete.
Step one, I steal the sheet, the first place you devoured me. Step two, I cut the hose and into part and I level.
Toby Parks, thank you so much. Really appreciated your time, because you are probably the busiest person I've ever met, and I've met quite a few. I want to close out, though, with reminding folks that on Sunday, December 22nd, from 2 to 7 p.m., we have Fire and Ice, the last studio party of the year at Mainframe. Shopping starts at 2, festivities kick in at 4. There'll be a live ice sculpture demo, musical guests, specialty cocktails, great gift options, and more. And after the first of the year, come by XBK to see their new curtain.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Thank you.